Welcome to the podcast. It's Pat and Stu in for Glenn today. We learn about the prisoner swap. We've traded a third round pick and a mass murderer for Brittany Griner. It's a big trade that went down right before the beginning of the show. We get into the Brittany Griner trade here. What an incredible effort here by our president. There's so many problems with it. We are, of course, happy that Brittany Griner is coming home as a U.S. citizen, but there's lots of problems, and we'll get into those today. The American Girl Doll Company is promoting a new book which encourages children to acquire puberty blockers if they feel uncomfortable in their own bodies. Is it? Well, that's where you go.
Yeah.
You got to go to the doll company.
Whenever I have a concern about a medical issue, I go right to American Girl Dolls.
It's incredible. Yeah. It really is. We also learned there were no women leads in action movies before Hunger Games. Which I didn't know. There's some other examples, but apparently those weren't real. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast as well as Stu Does America, available every day, and Pat Gray Unleashed, similarly available every single day. Don't miss out on that. And don't miss out on a holiday treat you will always love, Kexi Cookies. Yes, Kexi Cookies, available now. This is if you want to impress at a holiday party, do this and then people will like you.
Just go to Kexi.com, Kexi.
Yep, and you got all the holiday flavors up there right now, Pat.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So check those out. This is a company owned by Pat and his wife, and luckily Pat doesn't have anything to do with it, really.
Right.
It's Pat's wife and her amazing cookies. You will love these things, so check those out as well. All right, here's the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Pat and Stu for Glenn, who is still a little bit under the weather. The breaking news on Brittany Griner. She's been released now.
Yeah, she's coming home.
Yep, coming home, be home for Christmas. Exchanged her for the Merchant of Death.
It's just so good.
Isn't it great?
It's so good. I mean, could you possibly... We've traded the Merchant of Death for a WNBA player, which makes... Now, look... First off, I want Brittany Griner back in the United States.
Me too.
There's no doubt about
it. Many times.
I want her back.
Yep.
I'm glad she's coming home. That is a good part of the story.
And I'm glad,
sure.
Even though she was, I don't know, in favor of the kneeling or whatever it was.
Yeah, I don't care.
Back in the day.
I don't care what her opinion was.
She's an American.
She's an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We don't know the truth whether she was guilty or not, but there's a good chance she wasn't guilty. She may have been guilty. Regardless, the punishment does not fit the crime.
Not at all.
And obviously, the Russians were holding her as a chip to hurt us as this is going on. So we understand that, and I'm glad she's coming home. The reason why I don't think it's worth focusing on that entirely is because everybody agrees on it. Everybody wants Brittany Griner to be here instead of in a Russian, death camp somewhere in Siberia. So we all get that. Obviously, there was a priority, and they should have been negotiating for her release. Sure. The next part of that, Pat, is the Merchant of Death.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the Merchant of Death he's an arms dealer. And the reason I know a good amount about the Merchant of Death, and I will say there's a chance some of the stuff I know about the Merchant of Death is false. And the reason for that is because Lord of War is one of my favorite movies. It's a Nicolas Cage movie. It's an obscure Nicolas Cage movie, and I love it. It's a great, great movie if you've never seen it. Now, of course, it's got all sorts of liberal messaging throughout. It's a very anti-gun. It's very anti-war, blah, 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 blah. But it's a great freaking movie, and it's the story of this guy. Now, they name him something else because they want to take a little liberty with the story. It's based on him. It's based on a true story. But this guy was kind of a low-level guy, wound up trying to be an arms dealer, rose up the ranks of this illicit arms dealer world. And one of his big innovations in this moment was at the fall of the Soviet Union, he kind of took advantage of the chaos. He went in and negotiated with some of his, he was Ukrainian, I believe, and some of his relatives and people he knew that had high-ranking military positions in the old Soviet army. Soviet Union falls, they're now there with giant stockpiles of weapons. the record keeping's not there anymore. There's no oversight anymore from the Soviets. It's over. It's dissolving. So he comes in and buys tons and tons of weapons, pennies on the dollar, and then resells them to like African civil wars. And he just rakes in the cash. And he goes through, you know, a period where, you know, his brother is involved and he, you know, dies and has a huge drug problem. And the Merchant of Death gets a big drug problem going, marries a supermodel, goes through. I mean, it's an incredible story. It really is worthy of a movie. Yes, even a Nicolas Cage movie. It's worthy of a Nicolas Cage movie. And this guy did all sorts of things. I mean, he was responsible for God only knows how many deaths. The Liberian Civil War was one of his big targets. And this is back when Charles Taylor was in charge there and was absolutely brutal. And he would funnel weapons to these wars, sometimes both sides of the war, just to sell more and more weapons and enrich himself. This is a guy who, you know, probably now is loved in Russia because he really, you know, emptied the coffers of the Ukrainian army to sell a bunch of stuff of his own down in other parts of the world. He was almost caught a million times, eventually was caught I think it was in New York, and was put into prison and should remain there forever. That's how this story should end. Instead, he's on a flight back to Russia. And we're getting a solid center with good post-up abilities. So I don't know. It's a weird trade.
It is. Yeah. It is a weird trade.
I'm happy that mm-hmm. Brittany Griner is coming
too.
In. But then there's another layer of this, Pat, which is, look, do I want Brittany Griner back? We've already answered that question. Yes, I do. I don't care about her WNBA career at all. I don't know much about her. I don't care that she's in the WNBA. I don't care about the WNBA. But she's an American citizen. I would like her back. However, Paul Whelan's also an American citizen. And he's been over there for decades.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we got Brittany Griner out,
but
and not him. Now, you might say we only had a one-for-one trade, and that might be the answer to this. But, like, I know from a chivalry standpoint, I can make an argument, okay, even though he's had a much longer road in Russian detention,
mm-hmm.
we go with a woman for chivalry reasons. You can talk to me about that, but Joe Biden can't make that argument. He can't even tell what a woman is. This entire side mm-hmm. of our political spectrum can't define what a woman even is. So you can't make the chivalry argument here. If you can't make that argument, what argument is there to bring Brittany Griner back instead of Paul Whelan? What argument is there?
She had CBD and he's accused of being a spy.
Well,
I mean, maybe that.
Maybe.
Maybe that.
Maybe that's true, but I mean, they have already indicated.
I don't buy that.
First of all, he's not a spy.
Right.
We should be clear.
He's not.
He's definitely not a spy. That's total BS from Russia. But, you know, you can understand that from a Russian perspective that they'd rather release her. And maybe that's part of it. They've already indicated that they would negotiate on this point in back channels. At least there's been a lot of reporting on that. And so...
And really, you could exchange a spy for a spy, too. Mm-hmm. We've got people who are held here that we believe were Russian spies, and they probably were. But exchange for this guy, I'd be in total favor of a prisoner exchange in that eventuality.
For Paul Whelan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just a one-for-one exchange, spy for spy.
Sure. I mean, well, and it's ridiculous to say this because he's not a spy.
He's not,
But I sort of understand that. And I really want the American citizens that are in captivity over there back. It's a high priority. We mm-hmm. should be focusing on it. We should have people on it. We, you know, the same thing happened in North Korea. We saw activity there with the Trump administration. I mean, he focused on this a lot. This type of, and he, you know, also tried to get several captives back mm-hmm. From Russia. It's good to see that this is happening, but maybe you're pushing back here, Pat, and I'm being too skeptical on this. Maybe I'm wrong, but like, doesn't it feel like the only reason Brittany Griner is coming back instead of Paul Whelan is that she's famous?
Like, it does.
It does.
Yeah,
it does. Am I too cynical on this?
No, I think that's probably accurate. It's got a lot more publicity.
Right. No one knows who Paul Whelan is.
Right.
He's been sitting over there for a million years, and only his parents seem to care about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been trying to go to the media forever. And every once in a while, you see a profile story, and the story goes away. Brittany Griner is somebody that is in, you know, has some level of public profile. And I don't know. I mean, it just seems like this is just a play by the Biden administration to bring back a celebrity. Which, again, I'm happy she's coming back. But, like, it does not seem like this is a pure decision.
And I'm looking here. I couldn't remember when he was incarcerated. It was 2020. So he's been over there for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
In jail for 2.5 years.
May have got him confused with another guy.
He's sentenced, though, to 16.
She was sentenced to what, 10?
Yeah, 9 I mean, or 10.
This indicates that they don't even believe he's a spy.
Right.
The Russian government is not, if they thought he was a spy, they wouldn't sentence him to 16 years and Brittany Griner 10 for CBD. Right? Like, come on.
Yeah.
We all know that that's ridiculous. They don't even believe he's a spy. They know, look, these people are chips. They're negotiating chips for the Russians. And that's almost always the case in these situations. And I don't believe, and I frankly don't necessarily, you know, believe that Brittany Griner even did anything wrong. I mean, I think there's a good chance she didn't. Now, there's a chance that she did. Obviously, like, we don't think of, it wasn't even CBD. It was supposedly something elevated from that, I believe, was the accusation. It was, you know, the argument was at the time that she was using, like, you know, how you'd use medical marijuana for pain management. You know, like that was the argument at the time. Now, God only knows what's right and what's wrong here. You know, she'll come back and she'll tell.
Oh, it's hashish.
Hashish, right. Man, there we go. There we go. So, you know, it's a that probably is a crime there. Was she actually doing it? It's possible, right? I mean, she might look at this and be like, yeah, no one's going to do anything to me in the United States for this. It's not going to be a big deal. And, you know, what are the Russians going to throw out one of these big athletes and put me in prison? Maybe she made that calculation. But, like, once the war heats up, like, that calculation's out the window. I mean, it should have been out the window at the beginning, but it really makes no sense once the war, you know, battles and the buildup to the war starts. Obviously, they wanted revenge on us, and I think that's quite clear what was going on here, especially when you come to the punishment angle of it, right? Like, it's one thing to get in trouble for a crime in a foreign country. This does happen to people, but they didn't exactly go light on her.
No.
Like, Russian prison camp, 10 years. you know, it seems a little over the top.
A little bit, yeah. And that's why there was outrage over it, and there should be, and there should have been. But it did take them, a long time to get her out. I mean, she should have been out. If Trump were in office, I think she would have been out. Well, she might not have even been arrested, frankly. But if she were, I'll bet she would have been out in a week.
Yeah.
Instead of eight or nine months or whatever it's been.
That's probably true. I do think he would have focused on it. He also had a different relationship with them.
Right.
I mean, it would have been interesting to see what happened in that case. Because, obviously, Trump's Russia policy was much, much harsher on Russia than Obama's policy was on Russia.
Mm-hmm. By far.
I mean, it wasn't even close. He said things that were nice about Putin from time to time. And everyone's like, oh, wow, he just loves Vladimir Putin. And then you look at his policy and you're like, wait a minute, it doesn't seem like he likes Vladimir Putin that much. There never seemed to be much love policy-wise.
No, he was not soft on Russia at all.
The reverse of that. He reversed soft Russia policies that Obama had put into place.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess the left-wing argument to that is, well, those are just the people around him. He had people like John Bolton around him who were obviously more hawkish. And, you know, so maybe that was it. He just agreed to what everyone around him was telling him. But I don't know. I think that's what everyone likes to do with Donald Trump. When it's a policy that they like, they just say, oh, well, all the people around him are doing it. And when it's a policy they don't like, then it's him by himself making all the decisions. That's just how this works with Donald Trump. He deserves credit for his Russia policy. It was harsh.
He does.
And he was actually holding red lines, unlike the previous administration. It would have been interesting to see, does this war even happen if Trump is in office?
Yeah, my guess is no.
My guess is no.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Okay, so the popular doll maker American Girl has some advice for your kids. They've got a guidebook that they put together.
This That's great.
Is great. Yeah, it's great. And it's only $13. Well, it's $12.99. Okay, so it's not as expensive as I was leading on. It's only $12.99, and it has some great advice for children struggling with body image issues. And it suggests they ask their doctors for puberty-blocking medication and to seek transgender support without parental consent if you don't have an adult you can trust in your life.
What on earth?
Don't you get all your really serious life advice from doll manufacturers, from doll
Most
companies?
Of it. Most of it.
Most of my stuff comes from, you know, when I really have a heart issue, it's usually American Girl doll manufacturer.
Yeah, when I was concerned about compounding interest, I went to a sex doll company.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I was like, what should I do with my mortgage right now?
Yeah.
What's going on with that?
And what was their advice?
Their advice was, I can't say their advice. It was... Okay. It was X-rated. They swore at me a bunch of times. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was weird.
But anyway,
that is always where I go.
Well, American Girl has put out a smart girl's guide body image book. And it's on the website, again, for just $12.99. You know, if you're struggling, your kids are struggling, this is right where you go. The cover of the 96-page, it's a 96-page paperback. Wow. It shows four girls of varying body weights and skin colors. One's in a wheelchair. Another has blue dyed hair. And the subtitle reads, How to Love Yourself, Live Life to the Fullest, and Celebrate All Kinds of Bodies. You know, and then it tells you if you're struggling, if you're not comfortable with a part of your body, then, you know, you should go get some puberty blockers from your doctor. And that way... You know, you'll have a couple of years to decide whether you're comfortable with your body or if you want to change it, you know, through surgery. Can you believe this?
It's unbelievable.
I mean, American Girl dolls. We bought all of our girls American Girl dolls. Mm-hmm. They loved them. And now they're doing this with our kids?
So this is interesting, Pat, because I have small kids. Younger mm-hmm. kids. And my daughter
is Ainsley a fan of American
fan.
Girl?
Has, you know, yeah. tons of stuff.
Yeah.
She's, you know,
mine too.
For presents and stuff she's bought with her own money. Like, you know, she's even got the Jeep, Pat. She has the entire...
I didn't know there was an American
there's
Girl
a great
Jeep.
Jeep. Great
really?
Jeep. If you want to get the Jeep, it's fantastic.
Is it one that it's big enough for her to ride in it?
No, she's not that big.
It's for the
dolls
for the American Girl.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
So that's a very standard experience. I will mm-hmm. say... As your kids get older, you have to talk to them about some things that are going on in their lives, right?
Uh-huh.
Some changes that may be coming up soon.
Right.
Not like gender transition changes, but just the changes that every boy or girl goes through.
The normal changes, yeah, that they all go through.
And if you are a parent, you know that can be a little strange and
sure.
and challenging.
Yeah.
And so what do you do in that situation? This is unbelievable. You go and you look for resources, right, to
yeah.
kind of help you walk through it. Maybe a book that you can
yeah.
read to your kids. So I went through a bunch of, like, conservative reviews of these types of books because I was worried about, you know, what woke nonsense they would slip into these things, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I went through this, one of the ones recommended by all sorts of conservatives, religious people... All sorts of, were the American Girl doll series.
Oh,
it was a series
kidding.
Of all sorts of books like this, not just about not about gender transition at all, but just like puberty, right? Like
right.
you're getting older, like these are the types of things you're gonna get, you know, hair under your arms, right? Like stuff like that.
Yeah,
just to kind of let the kids know what's going on. And so I read the books from this company about the basics.
Yeah.
And they don't have any sign
of this kind of stuff.
Of this kind of stuff in there. So this has got to be new. I mean, this is not a book that I saw, the body image one,
yeah,
How to Love Yourself, Life to
newly,
the Fullest.
It says it's a newly released book.
So they're going down this
kids
road.
10 and older.
Mm-hmm.
And it says parts of your body may make you feel uncomfortable. and you may want to change the way you look.
Well, isn't it? Wait, stop for a second.
That's totally okay.
Stop for a second.
Mm-hmm.
That is totally okay.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person on earth has parts of their body that make them uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, I could tell you my gut is one of them.
Yeah.
I got to reveal the transition. I would like to transition into a thin person.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem to be happening, but I would like it.
Yeah.
So, and what was the second part of that? That you should be comfortable in your body? You know?
Yeah. It's totally okay if you're uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and you want to change the way you look. That's fine.
Yes, it's okay if you want to change the way you look.
Okay.
Well, it's so funny because when you are overweight, mm-hmm. and you want to lose weight, they say, actually, fat pride. You mm-hmm. should. Everyone is perfect. Everyone is perfect, and that's okay. No matter how you are, you were made that way. You were born that way, and you're perfect, and you should never want to change.
No, I was not born fat.
Right.
That is not true.
No, I ate to get that way.
I was 8 pounds, 7 ounces when I was born.
I transitioned into a fat person.
And I've really let myself go since then.
Right.
I am way more than 8 pounds, 7 ounces.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I was going to say.
Way more.
It looked like you put on a few since then.
Since birth, yeah, I have.
You really have.
So,
but like, that is... They're taking advantage of a really normal human instinct to say, you know, I'd like to look a little bit better. Gosh, I hate the way I look in this way. Everyone goes through that.
Yeah.
You should be able to take that rationally and in context and maybe make some changes that would make you more healthy. Not cut off your parts because you don't like them.
Right.
That's a different pitch.
Or start taking life-altering medication that can stop the natural process of your body. I mean, that's really dangerous. And doctors who are honest are starting to really speak out about that, fortunately. That, hey, it's not necessarily just this just delays things for a while and then you're going to be fine if you stop taking them. It can cause real problems for you. But they continue in another part of the book. You can appreciate your body for everything it allows you to experience and still want to change certain things about it. If you haven't gone through puberty yet, the doctor might offer medication to delay your body's changes, giving you more time to think about your gender identity. This is a
what the hell?
Doll company.
Yeah, and I guess like it is important. Yes, it's a doll company, but like they are bringing in experts in these fields to write these books.
No, I'm sure.
Like,
yeah,
this is actually a part of their company.
That's so bad.
And you know, a lot of the stuff that they have is totally, I think, would be cool with.
Yeah, you liked it.
It was fine. You know, it was what I liked about it is it didn't get into a lot of those like advanced questions. It was like, okay, here's how the body changes as you get older. Hey, make sure you put on deodorant, kid. You know, so because you're going to start stinking really soon. It was stuff like that.
Wow.
Which is, you know, helpful for parents to bring them through. And that's what's, I think, scary about this.
And I think this is maybe the scariest part. If you don't have an adult you trust, like your parents,
right.
I guess.
Who probably bought you this book.
Uh-huh. There are organizations across the country that can help you. Turn to the resources on page 95 for more information. I don't know what resources are on page 95.
It's absolutely unbelievable.
It's incredible to me.
Here, I have some. So this is also some other stuff from the book. The way you show your gender to the world through clothes and behavior is your gender expression. No, it's not. Can we forget even how ridiculous it is to try to change your gender? That is not a description of what gender is. The way you wear your clothes?
No.
The way you wear your clothes is your style.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that is. That we have words for these things already. It has nothing to do with gender.
How bizarre is that? That your genitalia has nothing to do with your gender, but your clothes do.
Yeah.
Now.
Like you can't tell anything about the gender of a child from whether they've got a hoo ha or what's the other one you use?
Man unit.
A man unit. A man unit or a hoo ha. You can't tell. However, you can tell if this is a quote from the book. Your gender expression can be feminine, masculine, or somewhere in between and might change. Maybe you'll experiment with bright dresses and long feminine hairstyles. Or you might try baggy shorts, plaid shirts, and a buzzed haircut.
Huh.
Your gender expression should make you feel at home in your body. You don't have a choice whether you're to be at home in your body or not. Even if you alter it with surgery, you're still at home in your body. Being at home in your body is a made-up concern. It's not a thing. Like, if you have a problem being at home in your body, you have something that has traditionally been called gender dysphoria, where you're having problems, medical problems, trying to understand why you feel strange in your own body. But that's not real. Your feelings are not real. You might think because you put on cargo shorts, you're a boy. You're not. I'm sorry. Like, there is no reason to indulge in this nonsense. There are interesting things to be learned about an individual, about the choices they might make in the clothes that they wear, or the way that they act, or the way they present themselves, or the hairstyle they choose. You might understand interesting parts about their personality, but there is very little societal value in this pursuit. What does it matter? Why do we care? You know, when we were doing the Pat and Stu show back in the day, Pat, I remember we used to play a clip from Ellen DeGeneres. And, you know, she's a very famous, obviously, LGBT. I don't want to say QIA because I don't know if she advocates for those things. I don't know. But she was an LGBT advocate for many, many years. Obviously, someone who really broke a lot of barriers to people in the mainstream culture. And they asked her about the transgender thing. And she was trying to let people who just couldn't grasp it understand what it was. And what she said in her description of the transgender thing was that gender, being a transgender person, gender is a feeling that you feel in your brain. It's the way you feel. Mm. And like, that might be interesting if your sister's going through that. It might be interesting to try to understand how they feel in their brain. But when we're talking about when you go into a hospital and you need to find out if you have ovaries or not, none of that matters. Your feelings don't concern anyone. They're not important. Full stop. They are not important. They're not important when it comes to that. It might be interesting to try to understand them from a physician's standpoint. It might be interesting from a cultural standpoint or in a societal standpoint. You might say, wow, that's an interesting quirk. Why does that happen? What does it mean? But it does not have value when it comes to policy. It does not have value there at all. What is important is whether it's a man or a woman, a boy or a girl, male or female. That is what is important. That's what needs to be on government forms. How you feel in your brain does not need to be on a government form. And it certainly does not need to be explained to a 10-year-old who is already so confused by the freaking Chinese Communist Party through TikTok that they're trying to do this stuff and trying to justify keeping it away from their parents. That's really bad.
It is really bad.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck program. Actress Jennifer Lawrence. She says some stupid things.
Yeah, she's not the brightest bulb.
Not bright. And, you know, incredibly progressive, liberal. But this is a weird comment. Sort of demeaning all of the women who've done action movies that came before her. She just said, I remember when I was doing Hunger Games, nobody had ever put a woman in the lead of an action movie because it wouldn't work.
Would not work. Never, no one ever thought about it.
Yeah,
nobody had ever thought about it, I don't think.
Until Jennifer Lawrence, of course, in 2012 with Hunger Games. We were told girls and boys can both identify with a male lead, but boys cannot identify with a female lead. Viola Davis, who's doing the interview of her, replies, oh, absolutely.
Good pushback there on that one.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, we do have it?
Yeah, let's listen to it.
Let's see that and hear it.
I remember when I was doing Hunger Games, nobody had ever put a woman in the lead of an action movie because it wouldn't work. We were told. What? Girls and boys can both identify with a male lead, but boys cannot identify with a female lead.
Oh, absolutely.
And it just makes me so happy every single time I see a movie come out that just blows through every single one of those beliefs.
Wow, yeah.
It's just not, it might have been a belief, but it was dumb. It wasn't true.
It's a bad belief.
What does Angelina Jolie think about this?
I know. I'd like to know.
There's a bunch of movies.
Lots.
Where she was the lead.
One was Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
That came well before 2012. Another was Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah. I mean, that was a more of a
It was a Brad Pitt and her kind of co-starring thing.
Yeah.
But she was great in that.
Dual leads, yeah.
She was a badass in that.
Yeah. I mean, she was in a bunch. I mean, Angelina Jolie has a ton of them. I mean, she's not the only one, obviously.
Let's try Sigourney Weaver, perhaps, in Aliens.
Yeah.
1979. Is that before 2012? Or
I don't know. We have to do the math on it. But yeah. I think it might be. I think there's a chance
there's
it
a
is.
Possibility it was before 2012. Mila Jovovich, who starred in 6 Resident Evil movies. Since 2002.
Our girl Kate Beckinsale has got to be on this list.
Yes, she
was in a bunch of action movies.
Those vampire things.
Yeah,
right?
I can't remember what the name of it was.
Underworld.
We should note that she doesn't know she's our girl, but she's kind of our girl.
Oh, look at the way she looks at us.
Yeah, you could see. If you're watching in the screen, you're like, gosh, look at their longing eyes. She's looking at me and Pat.
Uh-huh.
That's just a thing. Looking at Angelina Jolie. Laura Croft is obviously the Tomb Raider thing.
Yep.
She also had, where she was the lead, let's see, Mr. and Mrs. Smith,
mm-hmm.
and what was this, Assault, which was an Assault?
Assault?
Which, not Assault,
oh, yeah,
but
yeah,
Salt.
Yeah. Yes, Salt. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
That she was
not
in that.
Maybe her proudest moment, but it was definitely
an action movie.
Yep.
Wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Which was definitely an action movie.
I see that all the time on Netflix.
Yeah.
I don't watch it, but I see
it. I did
pop
watch
up.
It. That's the one where you could curve the bullets, right?
Is it good? Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I kind of did like it. It was like...
It's fun.
It was. It's a little bit of a remnant of that era where everyone was like, what if we completely overproduce every scene? You know? Oh, my gosh, we could do what? We could make bullets... What if every single scene has bullets curving? It was that type of movie.
Yeah.
But, like, in a way, it was so over the top that I liked it. You know, I thought it was solid.
Right.
I mean, it's a little ridiculous, but it was also solid.
Uma Thurman.
Oh my gosh.
In
Kill
Bill.
Kill Bill, yeah.
There was according to the article, I don't know this, Nikita in 1990. That only predates Jennifer Lawrence by 22 years. Charlie's Angels, there's so many.
Oh god,
many
Charlie's Angels was 3.
Action movies.
Female leads.
Yeah. Yeah, so many of them. I don't know where she got this or why she thinks she's the trailblazer here, but we got news for you, Jen. You're not.
It seems like one of these things where Hollywood celebrities are so in their own heads, thinking everything about their lives is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I think, what goes on here, right?
It's embarrassing, though.
Kate Beckinsale was Underworld, by the way, she was in.
Uh-huh.
That was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a bunch of them.
You know, she could
like,
just
how
be...
can we put Kate Beckinsale in leather pants? I give her this role. This would be, I guess, part of the critique of Jennifer Lawrence, maybe.
Mm.
And some of these movies are maybe for older audiences. I mean, I don't know. Is there any argument that she could make? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Now look, are guys more common in action movies?
Yeah, of course.
Sure. Because... typically speaking, though, that is the audience. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, boys typically. But I will say, I have to, when people ask, what's your favorite? I actually had that. I did an interview with a couple years ago with a conservative entertainment like website, and they were like, mm-hmm. "Well, what's your favorite genre of movies?" What's my favorite genre? I just thought that was an interesting question. Mm-hmm. You know, am I a horror guy? You know, I watch a horror movie here and there, but no. Action, not really. Here, this is what I came up with. These are my 2 favorite genres of movies. They're not full genres. Number one is dramatic retellings of relatively recent historical events.
That's a popular genre right there.
But it's like,
and you came up with that on the website?
Yes. Okay. So it was,
they're like, we've been lining this interview up.
It took me like 40.
Who lined this up with Stuber Gear?
Maybe like 40 minutes to come up with that. But I think it's true. Like, you go back to like anything from World War II on.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
When you take like an event, we mentioned it earlier, Lord of War is a perfect example of that genre.
Right.
Where like it was a real guy. This is the guy that got traded for Brittany Griner in the swap that happened today.
Yep.
He was an arms dealer. Nicolas Cage plays him. It tells his story about how he got into arms dealing and all this stuff. And it's not exactly... 100% accurate
mm-hmm.
when it comes to that telling. It's somewhat fictionalized, but it's based on a true story from relatively recent, like Captain Phillips,
Yeah.
But those types of movies I freaking love.
I do too.
They're just great, and I can watch basically any of them, especially if they're based on a true story and pretty close to it. The other one, my other favorite genre of movies is really hot actress kicking everybody's ass. I love those movies. They're just great. Huh. And like, you know, what was the one we Atomic Blonde was the one we talked about. Charlize Theron.
Mm-hmm.
I love that movie. She it's goes great. Around. She kicks everybody's butt. She kills a bunch of people. She looks really good doing it. That's the entire movie. It's great. It's my favorite genre of movie.
It's hard to argue with that genre.
It's great. Yeah. It's like these women who weigh like 118 pounds just killing like a 340-pound guy. And you don't
think but they're highly trained.
They're highly trained,
Stu.
So it works, and I don't care. And all of those movies I love. And when she said that, I was like, gosh, like not only is she wrong that they've never tried this, it's an entire genre of movie, and it's my favorite genre of movie.
Yep. Yep. And it predated Jennifer Lawrence by a lot.
By a lot.
By a lot.
It's not a close call.
No, it's really not.
Now, Atomic Blonde was after Hunger Games, if I'm not
It was.
Mistaken.
I think it was 2015.
2015.
Yeah.
By the way, there are plans of an Atomic Blonde 2. So I'm just
oh, really?
That out there. That's, I've,
oh, my gosh.
I'm not saying I've looked, because I have many times, because I want a sequel.
I think my favorite genre right now is documentaries. I don't know what it is about I can't get enough of them.
Yeah, I don't even count that because I'm a huge documentary guy. I've loved them forever. I'll watch almost any documentary.
And Netflix has about 714,000 of them.
So many of them.
I mean, I'm just scanning through the movies like you do on Netflix, and I thought, David Geffen has a documentary?
I'm watching it.
Music and movie mogul David Geffen? Gotta see that.
Yeah.
And before I know it, I'm watching it. Bruce Lee. Oh, my gosh. There's something on Bruce Lee? Why don't I do a deep dive into his life, which I've been on lately.
A woman was killed in 1978 in suspicious circumstances, and we never solved it?
I've
got to find out what happened to this person I never heard of. It's incredible. The true crime stuff. Does the true crime stuff suck you in at all?
It does.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
When they come out with new stuff, I don't necessarily jump on the bandwagon right away, but the second I'm 3 minutes into it, I'm locked in for the entire series.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know what it is. Too. I've been to several of the Crime Con events. Do you know these things?
Crime Con?
Crime Con. It's a true crime convention. It's like the biggest true crime convention in the United States.
And you've gone to a convention of it?
They're awesome.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you know, really cool. They happen once a year, I think.
Here in the DFW?
No, it's all around the country.
Okay.
And they're really, really cool. And they always have like the best. Like, they'll take whatever the big Netflix series is. They have, like, the lead attorney who is actually arguing the case. And they bring them in and they tell their whole story. They have the presentation, the photos, the documents. They try to, like, solve the case. It's really interesting. And it's one of those things. It's just a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Because you start getting into the true crime stuff. There is endless content. It's all really good.
It's amazing how many murders have not been solved.
Yes. It's scary.
You would think it's only happened a couple of times. About 80% of the murders that happen are solved.
That's my impression. If you look at Netflix, I believe we solve 1% of all murders.
It does look like that.
And the ones that we do solve, we're always wrong on. The poor people are always improperly imprisoned. That's the Netflix lesson. We don't solve any murders, and when we do solve them, they're wrong.
But that's another reason for another documentary.
Yes!
We do a documentary on the person who spent 35 years in prison wrongly accused. I'm a sucker for that stuff, too.
I am, too. I love it. Some of the characters are so freaking crazy, and some of the stories are so crazy.
Oh.
And they do what Law and Order does to you, where you, no matter what their pitch is, you sort of believe it. Like, it's really hard for me to be critical when I'm watching those things. And this is, of course, why they make documentaries for political positions. Because I don't know the details. I'm not an investigator. I'm not involved in the day-to-day investigations of crime.
Based on the stuff they show you, they can lead you down the trail.
Like, you watch these documentaries, you're like, oh my gosh, how come they won't let this guy out of prison?
Right.
And then you like Google it, and the person's like, actually, we have film of him doing it. Like, wait, they didn't include that? Why would you?
Like an important element that should have been in the documentary.
You should have told us they had film of him doing it, like right at the beginning of the documentary, I think. Like, they don't do that.